Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there, nobody's touching!
Trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win!
Welcome to episode 151 of the Average Cheese Podcast. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. It's just Peter and I, Sir Peter and the Average Cheesehead, for episode 151. Peter, it's the Brian Williams episode.
And you know what? It very nearly was Brian Williams.
I'll get it right one day.
I liked him as a player, you know, the outside linebacker on that Super Bowl team. He was a good player. Underrated. Very underrated.
Brady Papinga?
It could have been Brady, but it really could only be one player if we look back in Packers history, and that's Hall of Fame center Jim Ringo. Ringo's career, he was a college center at Syracuse. Small, just 6'2", listed around 230, but played at about 220, apparently. Was the Packers selection in the 1953 draft, 79th overall pick in that draft, and would go on to be a six-time first-team All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler for the Packers. What's interesting is in his very first camp, he very nearly just left the team thinking that he wasn't going to make it in the NFL. Fortunately, decided to stick it out, became a starter almost immediately in his first year, and was 53, and he was an All-Pro and Pro Bowler even before Vince got to the Packers. Then, of course, took part in those championship teams of 61 and 62, and then was traded in 1964 to the Eagles. And there's a big story around, or there's a story around that trade, which after being traded to the Eagles, he carried on playing for the Eagles for 3 years, earning three more Pro Bowl berths, and then retired after the 1967 season. Played in 131 games for the Packers, started in 130, including starting and playing in 126 consecutive games. And that streak continued into his Eagles days. I can't remember the exact number, but it ended up with something like 180 consecutive games played. He went on to quite a long coaching career. And one of the things he did do was the offensive line coach at the Buffalo Bills in the 1970s. You know, and that was when they had the electric company blocking for O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty special offensive line. And I'm sure that they learned a lot from being coached by Jim Ringo. Was a member of the NFL's All-Decade team of the 60s, as you'd kind of expect for somebody with all those All-Pro and Pro Bowl appearances. Inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame in 74 and inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1981. And truly one of the great Packers. Whenever anybody talks about who was the greatest center in Packers history, just one name comes up, and it's Jim Ringo's. Been quite a number of solid players through the years. Larry McCarron was a multiple-time Pro Bowler. James Campen was a good player. Frank Winters was a good player. Jim Ringo, that Hall of Fame level, has to be the number one in Packers history.
I had to look it up while you were talking. The record for consecutive starts at center is Mick Tinglehoff from the Vikings. 240 games in a row.
That's pretty special.
That is special, because 180, there's no downtime as a center, right? You're getting hit by somebody on every play, and probably two guys, maybe three.
Absolutely. The other thing to remember that those guys, certainly Jim Ringo's day, and certainly the case for Jim Ringo, is that he was the long snapper as well on field goals and punts. So he was getting all of those hits as well, where you're pretty much unprotected. You know, you can't line up over the long snapper these days.
Right. You got smashed back in the 50s and 60s, I'm sure. All right. Thank you for that. All right, let's get on to the slices. So the Packers lose, and that drops them basically out of they're not no longer in the hunt. Well, they're at the bottom of the list of in the hunts. I think they just keep them on there because you never, never know. They're 6-8. They have a good chance, and we'll talk about this later, of winning the last three games. Although they could have won the last two also. So they could end up at 9-8. The scenarios are too hard to, at this point, pick, right? Because we don't know what other teams are going to do.
They're not eliminated if they lose this weekend, but they pretty much are. They've got to hope for a Seattle loss against an NFC team. Seattle plays the Eagles tonight. They could do with another Minnesota loss as well. They need to move past the Vikings if they can.
It'd be nice to move past them and then beat them.
The Vikings have got the Lions to play twice. The Vikings play the Lions, the Packers, and the Lions. So there's a chance there.
There's a chance they go 0-3 and yeah, end up 7-10.
Unfortunately, there's a chance the Packers go 0-3 as well.
Right, and go 6-11. Exactly. There definitely is. No real big injuries from the game against the Bucs, and no real roster moves. So A.J. Dillon has a broken thumb. It's pretty hard to play running back. Like you see linebackers and defensive linemen and offensive linemen just club up. I don't know that he can do that. I saw Kenyon Drake had a couple snaps in this game, maybe two. Patrick Taylor got a few snaps. Aaron Jones, we'll talk about this later, got in at the beginning of the game. Let's talk a little bit about 23, though, Peter. What do you think is going on with Jair Alexander?
I'm torn. What I really believe is when he was injured, they didn't believe at the time that the injury was would keep him out as long as it has. And so that's why he didn't end up going on injured reserve. And I think it's just been one of those injuries where it's just taken longer to heal than anybody expected. Yes, people are now questioning, should he have gone on injured reserve? Is there something else going on? I actually believe that it was just one of those unfortunate things that they didn't want to put him on injured reserve because they thought he would be back sooner.
That makes far more sense to me when you say it like that. Because, right, if you knew for sure he was going to be out for 4 weeks, if nothing else, you get rid of the chatter and all the nonsense that the team has to deal with that injury. I'm not really buying the he doesn't want to play for Joe Barry thing. I don't buy that as a excuse for why he's not playing now, because that's coming out and because of the Joe Barry mess and all the chatter about him. People are tying those two things together. I think Jair Alexander likes to play the game of football. So I don't know that he would just sit out because he's on strike because he doesn't like Joe Barry. We were in the hunt 2 weeks ago. If he could have played, he would have played.
I also think in this day and age when you've got the inactive players, you've got your game day inactive, 7 or 8 players who you can name inactive, carrying an injured player, you're not really losing that much by carrying an injured player on the active roster because he just becomes one of the inactive guys on game day. Yeah. So I think it was one of those situations. We know he's going to be out 2 or 3 weeks, but we don't think it's 5 or 6 weeks at the time. You know, if they're certain it's 5 or 6 weeks, then you put him on injured reserve. If you're not sure, then you don't put him on injured reserve.
All right, on to the Packers' loss versus Tampa Bay. Offensive top PFF grades, Rasheed Humphrey-Walker, 88.7. That's not a typo this week.
That's not a typo.
Dontavian Wicks, the proof is in the pudding. He played well. My guy Jaden Reed was in the 70s. Elton Jenkins had a pretty good game. Zach Tom also in the 70s. Those are your top 5 PFF grades on offense. Talk a little bit about the good.
So there were a number of really good plays, but the good started early with Aaron Jones in the opening drive. You know, he immediately looked sharp, looked good, carrying the football well, breaking tackles, finding the hole, giving Packers something that they haven't had this season or has consistently had this season. So that looked really good early. And then there were a number of plays, not least Jordan Love's second touchdown pass to the corner of the right corner or right sideline of the end zone, however you want to call that, was if Aaron Rodgers had done that or Brett Favre had done that or Patrick Mahomes had done that, we would be hearing about it forever. So that was excellent. Again, Tucker Kraft showed up, 4 catches for 57 yards, touchdown. He's really come on in the last few weeks, catching 3 passes a game or 4 passes a game. Well, that, you know, that translates to 50 or 60 catches a season, which we haven't had from the tight end position for a long, long time. Lots of good things, I think, to pick out of the offense. Whilst it wasn't 100% consistent, there were things that you'd like to have better, and we'll get onto some of those. I thought there were lots of good things to pick out of the offense.
Dontavian Wicks is your leading receiver, 6 catches for 97 yards. I don't know what to think about him. He's a good player. That's real fucking great, Captain Obvious, but better than you would expect for a rookie as late as he was drafted by the Packers. You know that draft with Jamon Moore and MVS and was it Allison? No, wasn't
Jordan. Benemius St. Brown.
NEQ St. Brown. Yeah. They were flawed guys. right? Not flawed. That's not fair, but fuck it. I don't know. They all had deficiencies in their game that were very apparent. MVS can't catch the football. You know, Hugh St. Brown couldn't get open. Jamon Moore couldn't stay healthy. But with Dontayvion Wicks, I cannot find a glaring weakness in his game that you could find in those three guys or those two. He just isn't lightning fast. But if you can get open, we don't care if you can run the 4.240. He gets open and he gets into spots. And I think he's running the right routes. He's not a wide receiver one, but maybe he will be.
No, I was going to say that the whole group of wide receivers has just progressed week on week on week. And we've talked about this a million times, but
different guys. We're talking about Dontayvion Wicks this week. My guy Jaden Reed had a pretty good game too, but he didn't have the 97 yards that Wicks had. I want to go back to Tucker Kraft for a second. I think if the Packers are smart, and I hope they are, they will use Musgrave as the guy that he is and use Tucker Kraft in the routes that he is the most effective at. Because Musgrave, Todd said it last week, Musgrave is a straight line guy. Tucker Kraft has a little bit more lateral movement than Musgrave does. You run Musgrave towards the sideline, and the only place he's going to go is towards the sideline. He's not going to be able to stop a route, turn, go somewhere else. Tucker Kraft can do that. If the Packers can use those two guys correctly, they've got two really nice weapons, and they're rookies. Rookie tight ends aren't supposed to be good. That's what we've heard, right? They take time to get acclimated with whatever it is that the NFL does. These two guys look like they have it.
Musgrave is that kind of vertical down the seam tight end. You want him running towards the goal line, like Keith Jackson used to do. I'm not putting him up at that level yet, but that type of tight end.
Your guy, Jordan Love, has cemented himself in the top tier. Not top tier. That's not fair yet. Maybe the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. That throw, like you said, that should be on Twitter. The NFL should be tweeting that out. The Packers should be tweeting that out. That is a running sidearm throw in the absolute perfect spot. Jaden Reed barely got his feet down. That's how perfect that throw was. It was there exactly when it needed to be, and it wasn't from a standing position, you know, from square feet. The only thing I will say is he's very comfortable with his feet not square, and sometimes he needs to square his feet off a little bit.
100% agree with that. And I think that will come over time. That's just to keep working at it, a progression thing. You know, there's plays that you can get away with college level that you won't get away with at the pro level. And that stuff will just come.
That or he just gets better at throwing from every arm and foot angle. there
is that as well.
And be Brett Favre or whatever. Let's get on to the bad. I'm not going to put Kenyon Drake and, you know, throw him under the bus. He had five plays. That was a strange handoff. Do you think he wasn't supposed to grab that football and he was supposed to just let it go?
It was odd.
Grabbed it off his hip. Like, oh, okay, I'm going to take this. It was a great play by him to not fumble that football.
I reckon Matt LaFleur heard you from last week saying, Drake in there. Yes. So I think that was it. Then Kenny Drake said, if I'm in here, I'm carrying the football. Come
That's
on,
right. Give me the football. You're not going to fake it to me. I'm taking that shit. I need to make this roster. Thanks for listening, Matt, by the way. Josh Myers wasn't good. And at some point, we're going to talk about drafting and that kind of thing. I don't know where we go with Josh Myers because he shouldn't be going down. The grade should be at least level at this point. You're going to have bad games. But they played the Bucs. It is Vita Vea who was hurt, but he did play. And I get that you might have bad games against guys like that, but he hasn't been good at all. And then my guy, Sean Ryan. Come on, Sean. This was your time. You got plays in this game. It was your time to shine, and you didn't. And then two tight ends also sucked. Josiah DeGuara, no shock there. Wasn't good. Ben Sims. I don't know, Peter. He's just a guy.
If Musgrave and Kraft are the guys going forward, which they obviously are, the number three and number four tight end, you know, you have to be realistic in your expectations of those guys.
But then you don't run them out into the pattern. At some point, and again, we beat this drum, or I beat this drum all the time, you need a road grader. You need a big dude that can block. Ben Sims is a pass catcher. I don't know what Josiah DeGuara does, to be honest. But Musgrave is more of a pass catcher. Tyler Kraft, who, according to the things on Twitter, he's saying he loves to block guys, but he's not great at it yet. He's more of a multi-dimensional guy, but you need just a guy that blocks. Those guys are easy to find. They're cheap. and that you can find a different guy every year that can just go out there and be your third tackle. I hope the Packers do that next year. You need that guy, especially if your offensive line isn't going to be very good. Anything else on offense?
The only thing for me is they need to start turning field goals into touchdowns. That's the one thing where the offense needs to become more effective. And that's why, you know, 20 points needs to become 28 points.
My thing on offense is, did we run the football after the first half? It seemed like we went away from it. I mean, we ran the football on that first drive, Aaron Jones. And if Aaron Jones was on a snap count, maybe not run him 18 times on the first drive and then, like, sorry, Aaron, your day is done. I just thought that was a really strange way to put a man on a snap count.
It felt a bit like that, but we've seen that, you know, even when Aaron Jones hasn't been beat up, we've seen that kind of strange, lots of use early and then not so much use later on.
You become one-dimensional. You put a lot of pressure on Jordan Love and that offensive line because they know everybody in the place knows you're going to pass on every down. All right, let's move on to the defense. PFF grades, Kingsley Enagbare, a 90.7. And a really nice strip sack slash interception because that ball never hit the ground.
Yeah.
That would have been that was a turnover either way, no matter what they called it. And then it drops off drastically from there. TJ Slayton with a 69 grade. He had a couple nice plays against the run. Lucas Van Ness, 68.3. He's starting to get a little bit more playing time. Can we stop there? What are your thoughts on Lucas Van Ness so far? Is he further along than you expected?
He's about where I would have expected for that guy coming out of college. Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Ballpark is about where I would have expected him to be. Whether that's what I would have wanted out of the 13th pick in the draft at this stage of the season is a different question. But for that guy coming out of college with his level of skills and experience, he's about exactly where I would expect him to be.
So I picked, when we did our mock draft, I picked Miles Murphy out of Clemson. Van Ness has more tackles, more sacks, more assists than Miles Murphy at this point. Miles Murphy he's a backup also with the Bengals, but has like half the amount of tackles and I think one less sack than Lucas Van Ness. So I'm just using that as like a comparison. Yeah. Like these were the same guys. So he's not doing terribly. And a guy, right? Like we have Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary. We don't need Lucas Van Ness. We still
don't.
And
that's exactly right. And that's exactly the point, isn't it? He is where you would kind of hope, and you don't need him necessarily to be any more than that right now. When he was drafted, this is what the expectation should have been.
He had a higher PFF grade than Rashawn Gary. Did you see the stuff on social media where Rashawn Gary is sitting on the bench after the game? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd love to know when that photo was taken, whether it was immediately after the game or 5-10 minutes after the game had finished. It painted a picture to me, not knowing the full context of when the photo was taken, of somebody that really cared and was really upset about what had happened.
That's how I took it too, 100%. Now, someone on Twitter, one of our followers said, it looks like a team divided thing. I love it. I think that he cares so much about how the game goes that he's pissed off probably at himself because he didn't play particularly well in this game, but also that they lost. The team has to believe that they are now, it's absolutely do or die. It has been anyway, but now at 6-8, there's no more second chances. You can say every game is a playoff game when you're 6-6, but it's not 100% true because you don't have to go 11-6 to make the playoffs. You do have to go 9-8 or you ain't making the playoffs. You're not going 8-9 and making the playoffs most years. Good, the bad, and the ugly on defense. The Packers had 5 sacks in this game.
The Packers had 5 sacks, and I would jump onto the ugly here about those sacks. They came on early downs, typically. Now, we had the Enagbare play that you mentioned, which is obviously very, very good. And an important play as well at the point it had happened. The Packers had been stopped on fourth down. If the Bucs had started to drive from that point, which later in the game they showed that they could almost at will, I think that would have been a huge downer. So I think it's a doubly big play at the point on which it came. All the other Packers sacks came on early downs, which Tampa Bay overcame. The sacks didn't matter. Because they were able
to convert first downs.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is why almost there ought to be a separate category for first and second down sacks and third down sacks. Because third down sacks are a lot bigger.
Because they get you off the field.
Yeah.
anything else good in a game where Baker Mayfield looked like Johnny fucking Unitas?
That's just what went through my head.
He was perfect.
We made Baker Mayfield look like Johnny Unitas, and Danny DeVito look like Joe Montana.
Right, exactly. He had a perfect quarterback rating, like a 158. He was 22 of 28 for 381 yards and 4 touchdowns, even though he was sacked 5 times. Rashad White had a nice game. All over, Rashad White had like 150 combined yards-ish. They could have done whatever they wanted, it felt like. They could have run or passed at will, and it would have worked. Let's look at the PFF grades quick, because they're bad, as you would expect. Colby Wooden probably had his worst game as a professional. He had a 26.6. Last week, I asked you what the highest PFF grade was. What's the lowest? Can you get a zero? Inquiring minds, meaning me, I'd like to know. Quay Walker, a 29.5? Are these real? Are you making these up? Yeah.
No, these are for real. Although I have to say, let me go sideways a minute. I was really tempted this week to put some made-up names in the Packers released from the practice squad list to see whether or not you'd pick them up.
I'd start like, this is a cool name. You're like, yeah, it's a cool name because I made it up. Again, we went through the good PFF grades, and now we're going through the bad ones. Now, clearly, if the quarterback of the other team throws for almost 400 yards and a perfect QBR rating, your defensive backs didn't have a great day. Now, Eric Stokes was back. Not good. Corey Ballantyne. Carrington Valentine was awful in this game. Keyshawn Nixon had another bad game. Devondre Campbell was bad, had a 49.0. He's the best bad grade, Devondre Campbell, with 49. When you have grades in the 20s and the 30s, whose fault is it?
I'm a great believer in that over the years, the Packers have picked all of these guys in the first round of the draft. It leads to two questions. It's either those guys aren't as good as we thought they were when they were drafted, or it's a fault in the defensive scheme. It has to be one or the other, or a combination of both. This happens, you know, we talked about Danny DeVito last week. This happens week in, week out.
Baker Mayfield is a decent quarterback. I don't think any of us would argue that. In fact, Todd said some nice things about him last week, and he was right. But Tommy DeVito is not. And the guy we're about to play is not. You should be able to stop those teams with bad quarterbacks because you know exactly what they should be doing.
Well, I mean, I was trying to think back in terms of pass defense and guys getting so open. We've seen, you and I, and lots of people that follow the Packers over a number of years have seen the Packers give up more passing yards than this in a game, but normally in some kind of shootout. But it's difficult to look back and see guys that were so wide open and instances where it appeared that, you know, there were three receivers being covered by two guys. You know, the touchdown pass to Mike Evans down the left sideline. Rudy Ford was stuck between going over to help double cover, which he was meant to do, and the number 10 that was running straight past him, scot-free.
Right.
It was
a touchdown either way, right?
Yeah.
Rudy Ford had to pick a guy because both guys were beat on that play.
Difficulty that we all have as fans is that it appears to happen time and time and time again. Everybody makes mistakes. Every player will make mistakes, but it's how you come back from those. Don't keep repeating the same mistakes. And I don't know if it's the players, if it's the scheme, if it's a combination of both. I don't know. But what I do know is the result is what we all saw on Sunday, and something's got to change.
I do not believe they haven't given up. They're in a playoff hunt. Those guys want to win. I do not believe they just gave up because they want to fuck Joe Barry over. That's stupid. I don't believe that at all. Do I think that he puts them in bad positions? Yep. Do I think that they make bad plays? Also, yeah. I don't even know how to say this, but the Packers cannot play man-to-man because what happens in man-to-man is Devondre Campbell ends up on a wide receiver when they go five wide. What that says to me is teams know what the Packers are going to do on defense. We're going to put five guys in the pattern because they don't have five fucking guys who can cover guys because they are playing two corners, two safeties, two linebackers. And they never seem to change personnel drastically. Now, that may be because they can't stop the run for shit in most games, and they need to have two linebackers out there. How often have we seen Preston Smith, Devondre Campbell, Quay Walker out on a wide receiver? Not a running back who's split out wide, but a wide receiver. You and I can complete passes when a wide receiver is matched up against a 275-pound outside linebacker. That is the place you are going every time because it's going to work. Do I pretend like I know what the answer is to that? I don't. Because if they play nickel or dime, then they can't defend against the run.
I thought about that a lot today and worrying about, thinking about, should they be playing man? Should they be playing zone? Should they be doing more of this? Should they be doing more of that? Actually, when it really comes down to it, A, it's a results-based business, but us as fans, right, we don't necessarily understand all the intricacies of what the defense has been called, et cetera, but we do see the results. It's a results-based business. We see Baker Mayfield throw for nearly 400 yards and a perfect quarterback rating. So whatever the mix of players that you've called or people you've got out on the field or defensive scheme or whatever it might be, it don't work. You can say there was a communication problem, which I keep hearing now.
Let's
every
talk
week
about that right now. Let's just continue, please.
No, but you can say it's a communication problem. You can say it's this. You can say, actually, you know what? I don't care. What I expect is that the Packers live up to the Packers defense lives up to the fact that they've drafted all of these number one draft picks, high price free agents, etc. on that defense. It needs to be better.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it. If Matt LaFleur doesn't have the stones to fire Joe Barry midseason at this point, I think he should be fired. I've never said that before, I don't think, on this podcast, but I was absolutely stunned today. It's exactly what you just said, Peter. I don't give a fuck if it's all street free agents if you get the job done, but it's not. And we've talked about this a lot, but I don't care who you put out there, make it happen. Stop the other team from scoring 34 points and a team that doesn't have a ton of offensive weapons on it. You're not playing the Dallas Cowboys. You know what I mean? You're not playing a team that can put up 700 yards. You're playing a team with mediocre talent. You can't stop them. You couldn't stop Danny DeVito. You couldn't stop all the other shitbag teams we played, the Saints and the Falcons. You couldn't stop them either. And all of them are flawed to a certain extent. They don't have it. They don't have that quarterback or that wide receiver or that running back. None of those teams have that. You can't get the job done. And the fact that you can't fire this man because we're going to have to look at the tape. Motherfucker, you look at the tape every week. And every week the tape sucks. And it's getting worse, not better. You're not playing good teams and you can't stop them. The tape is going to show you exactly what you watched on the sideline for 60 minutes and that I watched on my fucking TV. What are you going to watch that's going to change it? Nothing. Your team is not good on defense. Man.
You know, and you've raised the issue, and I talked about this and tweeted about this earlier in the season. My fear for Matt LaFleur was he would end up losing his own job because of not dealing with the defensive issue. This is one of those situations where guys can be great position coaches or great coordinators, but at the head coach position, you have to make the difficult decisions like any manager does. Now, he might prove us all wrong.
Fire him tomorrow? Huh. Is that what you mean?
At the very least, when you go down the route that you go down of choosing that guy as your defensive coordinator with his track record coming in, you're leaving yourself open there. I fear now that for the first time, probably, the fan base is beginning to turn on Matt LaFleur.
Do we want a scheme guy? Do we want, I'll call him a Dan Campbell guy? Does it matter? I don't know. Like someone asked that on Twitter, and I thought that's a really good question. Because you do want a scheme guy, because you don't want to look like we look now. You don't want to have some fucking idiot out there who doesn't know how to call a defense. But I also think you need to have a guy that guys want to play for. If you had to have one or the other right now, would you want a rah, I don't call him a rah-rah guy, but I'm going to call him a rah-rah guy, or do you want a defensive genius?
So for me right now, I'd take the defensive genius.
Because you have all that talent? Is that why? Yeah. Because you have all these first round guys who you must think then, if they were schemed right, you think the Packers' talent is enough to win games.
I have to believe that, because if I don't believe that, then I'm also pointing towards what on earth's been going on in the Packers drafting for the last decade. If I get the best defensive coach that there is, and I don't know who that guy is, and he can't win, in inverted commas, with this defense, then it has to be the players.
If you get a new guy and he can't also do it, but you had Mike Pettine.
I think you have to get a guy that's running a different scheme, because I think you've got similar schemes going on here from Capers to Pettine to Joe Barry.
Yeah, that's fair.
Big Fangio type stuff going on. And I think you have to find I don't know who the best guy is, right? I'm not clever enough to know, but you have to find who the best defensive mind is, preferably a guy with a track record. Because you can point to that and say, this is the reason we're bringing this guy in. Proven track record. It already works. And I think players can believe in that.
Let's move on to special teams. The Swedish meatball made all of his kicks this week. Ugly or not, they all went through the goalpost. Yay, Anders Carlson. You did not lose this game. And that's that. Anything else you want to mention before we move on?
I think that's it.
So thanks for listening to episode 151 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Jim Ringo episode. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.